Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, James Lewis, Sonny Lasky, Casey Jones, Nazia Chowdhury, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 76, Perdition Valley. The Child Baron of Brokeneckville hugged himself tightly and began to rock in the wooden chair. Tightening the grip on his long blaster, the Sec Chief of Brokeneckville edged toward his leader.
Baron, is there anything I can do to help?
Drooling slightly, the youth looked at the chief with unseeing eyes.
He has the secret, Sterling. But he doesn't know it. Not yet.
Secret? Who has what secret?
Vermont!
Harmont grabbed his temples as blood began to trickle from his nose.
He's here, but also back there. I can see him in 100 places. 100 times. But Tanner has stayed too long. There is a new future. A different casement. The universe is ripping apart. Time is healing itself.
Worried, the chief looked at the window, but could see nothing wrong with either the sill or the concrete casement. What was the Doomy Baron talking about? Harmont had accurately predicted future events a dozen times before and saved countless lives, both civilian and sec men. But had the young Baron finally crossed the line of sanity?
Baron, should I fetch a healer?
Both of Baron Harmont's hands clawed at the empty air.
Too late! He is the disease and the cure!
Sir?
Puzzled, Bateman started to sweat. His Baron was going insane. He knew of Vills with mad Barons, and it was never a good thing. Harmont hugged himself tightly.
Cold. It's so cold.
Would you like a blanket, Baron? Or I could make a fire?
Yes. Cold. Fire. The cold is a fire. Consume us all!
Lurching to his feet, the Baron stared at the open window and pointed a shaking finger at the empty air of the north.
Cold fire is here!
Then he shook all over and collapsed to the floor. Rushing to his side, the Sec Chief turned the child over and pressed fingers to his throat to see if the Baron still lived. The Sec Chief frowned in contemplation. Was this the long-ago prophesied day of death and the beginning of the second end of the world?
You heard me, Outlanders!
The young sec man standing in front of the Ville gate cocked both hammers of the homemade shotgun.
All of you, just move along now and there won't be no trouble.
Masked by the night, the six people on horseback gave no reply to the warning. Looking down at the nervous teenager from the back of his stallion, Ryan Carter tried to control his growing temper. Dark clouds covered the moon, so the only light came from the sputtering torches set on either side of the wooden gate. However, Ryan could still see that the huge shotgun held by the Sekhman was obviously not scavenged from pre-dark days, but a homemade weapon, built from iron pipes reinforced with layers of steel wiring wrapped around each barrel. The wooden stock was hand-carved, and the firing mechanism seemed to be taken from another blaster, perhaps a handgun. Yet the double barrels of the scattergun were worn from constant use, plainly stating that the weapon was in good working condition and had seen plenty of action. Even if the guard hadn't, Ryan decided. There was dried blood on the Sekhman's clothing, but none of it was his, and his face lacked the hard expression of a person who had taken the life of another. There was determination and even bravery, but not the slightest indication of combat experience. For all Ryan knew, this was the teenager's first shift of standing guard at the Bill Gate.
Now look, friend.
I said keep moving.
The teenager grimly leveled the deadly blaster.
We don't want your kind around here.
And what kind is that?
Ryan leaned over slightly in his saddle to pat the neck of his horse. The sweaty chestnut stallion shuffled its unshod hooves in the dry sand. Heavy saddlebags were draped across the muscular animal's withers, and on its flanks was the brand of Tucsonville, a lightning bolt set inside a circle. Even though covered with dust from the long ride, Ryan was well-dressed, wore good boots, pants without any patches, and a heavy coat trimmed with fur. A shiny long blaster was hung across his shoulders, and a slim hand blaster rested in the holster of a pre-dark gun belt. A bandolier of ammo clips crossed his chest, and at his side was a large knife of unknown design. Licking dry lips, the guard gave no reply, but he kept stealing glances at the left side of Ryan's face. Touching his leather eye patch, Ryan nodded.
Yeah, I thought so.
It had been a week since the companions had left Tucsonville in the south and charged across the zone, going from ville to ville, chasing down the rumors of the killings of one-eyed men. But they were always one day behind the ruthless Coldhearts who jacked everybody with silver hair like Doc's and killed any man with only one eye, like Ryan's. Left or right eye, it made no difference. It had been 3 long days of finding nothing but death and dust until now. So Ryan sure as hell wasn't going to be turned away from a ville where the killings were so fresh that a green Sekhman still had dried blood on his clothing. The guard tightened his grip on the scattergun.
Move along, wrist.
Behind the teen, 2 small hatches in the thick wooden gate swung open, and dark metal glistened in the dim torchlight. In spite of the poor lighting, Ryan caught the subtle motion with his good eye and shifted his position to get a clear shot with his handgun at whoever was standing at the hatch. If trouble came, it would be from the snipers hiding behind the gate, and not this nervous kid.
And how do you know we're not the ones doing all the chilling?
Sitting astride a chestnut stallion, J.B. Dix was dressed in loose denim blue jeans, a t-shirt, and a heavy leather jacket. A pump-action scattergun was strapped across his back, a 9mm Uzi rapid-fire rested on his thigh, and at his side hung a large canvas bag bulging with lumpy objects. The teenager stepped away from the gate to give a clearer field of fire for the folks at the blaster hatches.
We don't want no more trouble, so just get. And I mean now.
The boy was terrified, Christy Roth realized, but not of them.
Go fetch your sec, Chief.
There was a bloody bandage on Christy's left cheek and another on her wrist from the recent fighting down in Tucson. She was riding a roan-colored mare. A bearskin coat hung across the saddlebags. A pre-dark MP5 rapid-fire was draped across the pommel of the saddle, and a weird-looking wheel gun rode in a leather holster at her shapely hip. The cowboy boots and the stirrups were decorated with a silver embroidery of falcons, and the toes were steel, although at present the metal was caked with gray dust. The guard frowned at the sight. The redhead was better armed than any Sekhman. The loops of her gun belt were filled with live brass, more than the teen had seen in his entire life.
Ain't got a chief. He's...
He shut his mouth tightly and hunched his shoulders.
He was one of the people killed. Excuse me, chilled by the strangers. Thank you. That explains everything.
Dressed as if from another century, Doc Tanner was in frilly white shirt with a frock coat that spread behind him across the horse like an opera cape. A mixed pair of big bore hand blasters rode in a gun belt made of closed ammo pouches, and an ebony walking stick with a silver lion's head handle jutted from his backpack like a tribal totem.
By the three Kennedys. We must be hot on the trail of the Cold Hearts, if the locals haven't even replaced their sec chief yet.
That's an ace on the line.
Surreptitiously, Ryan shifted the reins from his left hand to his right. The one-eyed man was naturally right-handed, but he'd been hurt in a fight a short while ago, and his shooting arm wasn't completely healed yet. Five armed sec men walked out of the bill. As the portal closed again, Ryan and the others saw a dozen more men inside the bill, positioned behind a sandbag wall, working the bolts on long guns and notching arrows into homemade crossbows. These people were ready for a war.
Guess I'm the new sec chief here. And yeah, Baron Harrison was aced along with Chief Radjiver.
You guess you're the new chief?
Mildred Wyeth brushed a plait of beaded hair back off her dusty face. Riding an Appaloosa mare, the physician was armed with an MP5 rapid fire and a wheel gun rested in her belt. A pre-dark canvas bag hung at her side. Touching a freshly stitched scar on his chest, the sec chief shrugged.
Ain't nobody alive to tell me no.
Who aced the Baron?
Jack Lauren leaned forward in his saddle. The Palomino mare under the albino teen obediently altered her stance to accommodate his new position. The sec chief shrugged.
Damned if we know.
Where are the bodies, then?
The old man glanced up at the clouds overhead, and Ryan matched his stare. He carefully noted that none of the stars were being eclipsed by anybody walking along the top of the wall around the bill. That was good. The locals weren't friendly, but neither were they trying to jack the companions.
Hell's bells, just follow the birds. You can't miss them.
A couple of the armed men standing behind the sec chief nodded in agreement. The young guard shook his head, as if trying to dislodge the memories of the sight.
Nuke in hell, it was awful. Like something out of a nightmare.
Shut up.
The sec chief turned to face the companions.
All right, Rist. You asked some questions and got some answers. Normally, we're always interested in trading. Even better is getting news from across the zone. Not tonight. Now get moving, or we start blasting.
In the flickering light of the torches, Ryan saw more blaster hatches swing open and realized the new sec chief meant every word. There was nothing more to learn here. The answers the companions sought were back in the desert. Follow the birds.
Let's go.
Ryan shook the reins and started his mount into a slow walk. The rest of the companions were close behind.
Friendly folks.
Judiciously, the armorer eased off the safety of the 9mm Uzi in his lap.
I don't see why they're so rattled. So their sec chief got himself aced. Big deal. That's no reason for the whole bill to go triple red.
Squinting into the distance, Ryan saw a flock of birds circling a distant hill. Smoke was rising from a small campfire, but that was all he could see from this angle.
Let's go see if there was a reason.
Ryan kicked his mount into a full gallop. A couple hundred miles away, a pale man walked slowly through the cold rubble of the burned-down building. He was tall and slim, almost skeletal, his face so smooth that it seemed as if the man had never needed to shave. His blonde hair was slicked back tightly to his head, and a tiny silver stud twinkled in his left earlobe. His pants and vest, more practical than the robe he usually wore, were cream-colored, spotless, and perfect. Not even the dust raised by his walking through the ash seemed able to adhere to the odd fabric. Instead of boots, he wore silver slippers, the woven material strangely luminescent. But even more bizarre was the fact that the man carried no visible weapon of any kind. No blaster, axe, crossbow, knife, or even a simple club. In utter horror, the man called Delphi stared at the decomposing bodies of the men and the muties mingling together on the ground, bits of white bone and golden brass glittering from the gray ashes like broken promises.
Dead. They're all dead.
He gently kicked aside the distorted skull of a sticky. The operative of Department Coldfire couldn't believe his eyes. This was impossible. Moving listlessly among the wreckage, Delphi found more and more of the bodies everywhere, the death toll incredible, and every one of the muties had been shot through the head, even when there was only a head remaining, with no torso attached. The surviving sec men had shot the dead stickies just to make sure the muties really were deceased. That was ruthless efficiency Delphi could appreciate. In spite of all his arduous work and endless planning, slaving over every little detail, the hidden nest of Stickies in Tucson had been utterly destroyed in a single night. A single night. Then the locals had done everything but sow salt into the land to make sure the Stickies would never return.
My precious little ones.
Delphi bent to pick up the blackened skull of a Sticky. A cooked eye fell out as Delphi raised the skull high in his palm, wondering if he had known this particular mutant. Then Delphi had a sudden flash in his mind of Hamlet doing the exact same thing, and he cast the grisly remnant aside. It sailed across the smoky destruction to crash against the side of a marble staircase that rose high into the empty air and abruptly ended at nothing. The smashed bones went flying everywhere. Bowing his head, Delphi tightened his fists, attempting to control his growing rage over the slaughter. How long he held that position, Delphi had no idea, but his somber reverie was disrupted at the sound of hooves beating on sand. Quickly looking up, Delphi scanned the nearby pre-dark city until locating a man on a horse coming his way through the crumbling ruins.
Hey, wrist!
The rider tightened his grip on the reins and brought the stallion to a halt on the cracked sidewalk.
Get the nuke in hell out of there! The foundation is weak and could collapse at any second.
His face an inert mask, Delphi walked across the debris and onto the sandy street. A soft breeze was blowing, mixing sand with the ashes of the obliterated Sticky nest. Delphi tucked his hands into his sleeves.
Wrist?
Caldfield, the brewmaster for Tucsonville, grinned in embarrassment.
Sorry. Baron O'Connor told us to stop using that word. It means outlander or stranger.
Does it now? Well, I am a stranger. And judging from those black powder weapons, you must be a resident of Tucsonville. That's only a click away, correct?
His instincts flaring at the tone of the question, the rider let an arm drop so that his fingers rested on the checkered grip of the hand blaster resting in the holster at his side. He tightened the reins as the horse shifted its hooves in the hot sand.
Ain't no otherville for 100 clicks in any direction. Now what's your biz here?
My biz?
What do you want?
The brewmaster leaned over the pommel of his saddle and scowled.
Are you a lost pilgrim or a traitor?
Ah, an intelligent question at last. Most astute.